and welcome, dear listeners, to another edition of Israel Uncensored here on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. My name is Josh Haston. It is the 12th of September, 2016. We are in Jerusalem. I'm here alongside my main man, Binyamin Breski, engineer extraordinaire, bringing you a side of Israel that you're just not getting from the mainstream media. Thanks so much for joining us. Get in touch with me during the week, Josh at thelandofisrael.com. Also on Facebook, it's Josh Haston, H-A-S-T-E-N, on Twitter at Jew of Zion. Now, a good friend of the show is Mark Provisor. We've had him on to talk about the One Israel Fund. And, of course, Mark is the director of security projects for that organization. And last night I was at a wedding, and I had the privilege of meeting in person another member of the team there at the One Israel Fund. Her name is Natalie Sopinski. She is the director of community development. And we got to chat last night a little bit, get to know each other, and I thought it would be a great idea to have her on the show. Number one, to talk about her work with the One Israel Fund and what she does for the organization. And number two, she also lives in a community called Susya, which we've talked about on the show. I've talked about my work with the organization Regavim, which is a legal watchdog, which monitors illegal building. And one of the main communities, if you will, encampments, illegal encampments, which has made international headlines, is the illegal Arab encampment near the Jewish community of Susya, which is also next to the ancient Jewish town of Susya. So you have the modern community of Susya, which exists today, and Natalie will tell us a little bit about that. And then you have, in between, trying to cut the two off, you have this illegal Arab encampment, and then you have the archaeological site, remains of a synagogue from 1,500 years ago. So to talk about the One Israel Fund and the issue of Susya, Natalie Sopinska joins us from, I believe, from Susya, down there in the southern Hebron Hills, Natalie, welcome to Israel Uncensored here on thelandofisrael.com.
Hi, Josh. Good morning.
Good morning. Am I catching you actually in Susya?
Yeah, I'm in Susya.
You're home.
I'm home.
Great. So first, let's talk about One Israel Fund and the work that you do. And again, we know Mark very well in the security projects. What is your role? What are your responsibilities as Director of Community Development?
Well, I pretty much cover everything non-security. So communities all throughout Yehuda and Shomron, those 150 yeshuvim, big and small, have tons and tons of needs, just like every community has. So One Israel Fund kind of acts like federation, okay? We help with community centers. We help with recreational equipment, education, religious needs, synagogues, scholarships, classrooms, all that stuff. All that stuff that people need for daily life to live, that's what I do. That's what I help them do, help raise money for those different projects.
Uh-huh. And I mean, we've seen the work of One Israel Fund, other than security, parks, and all sorts of other projects. Give us a little bit more in terms of specific things that you've done. Let's say in the last year, the One Israel Fund, what have you been involved with?
Okay, so I started in October, and I've been involved with redoing a playground in Susya. Big project, big playground. In Rotem, in the Jordan Valley, they have a few projects there. They want to build up the Noar teen, a club room. Uh-huh. They want to renovate, and we're doing that. We got help renovating a synagogue for them. There is Gittit, another community out there in the Jordan Valley, synagogue renovation. There's Mevaot Yericho, another community out there, 40 families. They have a lot to do, playground and a lake. They want to put up a synagogue. Up here, Negaot, in Har Chevron, towards Lachish. They built a community center. We have to help. They're asking for help. Funding. Always funding, because, you know, people aren't, the money isn't here, you know? There's no federation. We are it. We are federation. And One Israel Fund isn't that big, you know? We have four men on the ground here. But it's small. It's lean. Lean and mean, I like to say.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to let people know that people actually live here. There are 400,000 of us here. And there's a lot going on. These places are happening, shaking. I mean, you should see on Shabbat. Packed.
And despite the, we'll call it a silent building freeze, communities are growing. You mentioned 400,000 residents of Judea and Samaria. It's growing, it's thriving.
Yeah, that's probably not even accurate anymore. But yeah, We have a waiting list here. We have a neighborhood going up now. I've been here for 11 years, since 2007. Three neighborhoods have gone up since I lived here. It's happening all over Har-Hevron. There are new neighborhoods everywhere, everywhere. There's no freeze. What happens is the government puts in, and the private company, Amana, puts in foundations. And then they wait till people buy the homes, and then they build the homes. So there's no real freeze.
Right. Okay. So, you're saying there isn't a freeze. I mean, other areas are claiming that that there is, meaning that their projects, which have been approved in the past, are going up, but there's no new projects. Maybe that's not the case by you, perhaps?
It may not be the case here. Har-Hevron isn't exactly, you know, in the news. Not so. It's not a real hot spot to move.
Right.
But quietly, people are moving down. We're getting them from the center. We're getting them from all over the country because they want a higher quality of life. It's a high quality of life here. And, you know, we're far from the city. That is the challenge.
Out in the country. Country life.
We're out there. We're all
It's a beautiful place, no doubt. And I want to get back to Susia, but I know that the One Israel Fund is having a dinner here, their annual dinner in the near future. If you want to go ahead and give the details for those who may be listening in the greater New York or the tri-state area who want to participate in the dinner, get involved, and whatnot. Go ahead and give us the information. When is it? Where is it? How can people get involved in the dinner coming up?
Okay, so the dinner is next Monday night, 19th of September, in the Museum of Jewish Heritage in Battery Park. I think it's 39 Battery Park, New York City.
Mm-hmm.
It starts early, 6 o'clock. Yes, it's come to that. That is where all our... I think that's the only place in America where people who support Yehuda and Shomron all gather together. Because, like I said earlier, think of us as Federation for Yehuda and Shomron. Do you know that that Jewish Federation in America goes to every single Jewish community in the world except for Yehuda and Shomron?
I believe it. It's sad, but I believe it.
It is unbelievable to me. That is just unbelievable to me.
I mean, you have, let's say, you know, for example, I believe, correct me if I'm mistaken, I think a lot of groups, maybe perhaps Birthright included, are not allowed to visit Judea and Samaria, other than the Kotel, which is actually part of post-1967 Israel, for lack of a better term. But it's my understanding that they're not allowed to visit these types of communities.
Okay, that needs to change.
Yeah. No, it does. I mean, it's like parts like in the manual.
That needs to change. That needs to change, and that needs to change fast.
And I'm not just singling out, you know, Birthright, but there are a lot of organizations that don't
Follow
their
party line, this old line. We will not cross the green line. And you know what? Years ago, I thought the same thing. When my husband and I moved to Israel with our kids, we thought we will never live over the green line. It sounded scary. We lived in the Arava, and we were told, go check out Susia. You guys would fit in. And we came, we drove up the Scorpion Path and go by Arad, and all of a sudden we see green. Pretty.
Right.
We didn't know.
No, it's good for you. You made Aliyah from where and when?
I'm actually from Delaware. My husband's from Philadelphia. We lived together in Philadelphia and made Aliyah in 2005.
Uh-huh. Oh, very nice. Nefesh B'Nefesh?
We were on a Nefesh B'Nefesh flight. But we went really through the Jewish Agency and lived in a kibbutz called Shluchot and a program called Beit Rishon B'Moledet, which means first home in the homeland. And you live like a kibbutznik for a year.
Very nice. Shluchot up there, just off the Jordan Valley.
Yes. Hottest place in the country.
Yeah, that's true. But a beautiful place. Nonetheless, I want to get into the issue of Susia. Now, you know, and my listeners know, I work with the organization Regavim, which safeguards state lands and tries to encourage the upholding of the law here in Israel. Susia is in the news. Susia is in the Washington Post, and Susia is on the front page of newspapers. This tiny community is on the front pages of newspapers all over the world. So I want you to first just introduce, let's start with Jewish Susia. How many families live in the community? And tell us a little bit more, other than the green, as you mentioned, what is Jewish Susia like?
Okay, so my neighborhood, my yeshuv, Susia, has about 200 families. spanning all the professions, engineers, doctors, teachers, farmers, builders, single homes. Most people have 4 or 5 kids. There's a school here, a big school, almost 1,000 students. It goes up to grade 8. There's a private yeshiva here, a yeshiva B'nai Akiva yeshiva. It's an environmental yeshiva for boys, 180 students. There's a health clinic. There is a store. There is a field school with guest rooms and a swimming pool and lecture halls. There is surrounding the yeshuv is our groves, olive groves and vineyards. And no, we don't have a fence. What else can I tell you?
Why is that? There's no fence. I mean,
right.
The stereotype is the residents of Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria unfortunately have to live behind a fence. I mean, you know, there are exceptions to the rule, and I guess Siskiyah is one of those. Why is that? Why is there no fence around Siskiyah?
Okay, well, I didn't make the rule, but as far as I have been told, when it was built in 1984, they didn't want to show they didn't have any fear, and they didn't want to show any fear, and they didn't want to, you know, close themselves off. They also didn't want to give the neighboring Arabs any line showing that where we begin and where we end.
Uh-huh. You didn't want to close yourself in a, you know, a ghetto. I mean, unfortunately,
right.
People don't realize that most of the time it's the Jews who are behind the fences, and anybody who travels the roads of Judea and Samaria, Gush Etzion, wherever you are, you see the Arabs walking freely, and you see them tending to their fields freely, something that's not covered in the media, in the mainstream media. You don't have that perception if you would, you know, read some of the newspapers, but that's in fact the sad reality. But I guess Siskiyah is trying to be one of the exceptions to that rule.
Yeah, when you actually live in a place, you know what the reality is. And the reality is here, it's pretty safe, okay? We don't have a fence, and we walk around. This is ours, and we're not afraid. And if you show fear, who's winning, really, you know?
I agree totally. I can't stand the fences. I can't stand the security barrier Israel built back in 2002. I understand practically why it was necessary, but I'm completely against it. I can't stand the fact that you drive down Route 443 or anywhere you drive in the country between pre and post 1967 Israel, almost all places you see these fences and whatnot. But I want to turn back to Siskiyah. You mentioned that the modern day community was founded in 1984, but of course adjacent to Siskiyah, you have the ancient Jewish Siskiyah, which is mentioned in biblical sources. Archaeologists found a synagogue dating back, I think, from the 5th century. And talk about archaeological Siskiyah, and then talk about the new Siskiyah. I mean, I don't even want to call it. I don't like even referring to it as Siskiyah because it's basically an illegal squatters encampment of Arabs from the nearby community of Yatta who have strategically placed themselves in between the community of Siskiyah and the archaeological site for the purpose of trying to cut the two off and to create a de facto Palestinian state in Area C, which is under Israeli administrative and military control. So talk about the ancient Siskiyah, and then talk about your new neighbors, because they have no historical ties to this area, the Arabs who have squatted on the land in between the archaeological site and the community.
Okay, you put it perfectly. That is exactly how it's laid out. It's us. And then really a kilometer away is ancient Siskiyah. We can see the big red roof of the synagogue. Now, ancient Siskiyah is amazing. It's an archaeological site. It is believed that the priests who fled right around the time of the Bar Kokhba revolt, they saw a lot of corruption going on around Yerushalayim in the Second Temple era, and they left early and started this community. And I mean, they have tons of evidence. I mean, they found 30 mikvot underground. They found
those are ritual baths.
Yeah. I mean, really, really. There was like one per four. Every four families had one. It was a very wealthy community. They had carved. They have carved caves underground, and they explain that that's where you go when it's hot, and that's where you go when there's trouble. There's an escape tunnel from the Beit Knesset out to the fields. and you can crawl through it still, showing that when there is trouble and everyone's out in the field, they would run and they would hide, or the other way around, go to attack from inside out. They have menorahs inscripted into the rocks. They found mezuzot. They have an alley called the Three M's where you can see them, menorahs, mezuzot, and mikvot. And they have found bones. They found an ossuary outside the walls. They have the walls showing where the city began and where the city ended, and the different homes. They have everything. They found an olive press. There's mm-hmm. a grape press. Everything. They got it all. It's huge. It's huge. And they haven't dug it all up. They can't. It's so big. You can stand on top of the synagogue and just look out and see it. It's very impressive. Very impressive. You could spend 4 hours there easy.
Right. And so in the late 80s, you had these Arabs claiming to be shepherds or using that as their cover, who came from Yatta, and they actually originally squatted on the archaeological site itself. The army moved them to where they are now, just a stone throw away, and now they are cutting off the community to the archaeological site. The High Court of Justice says that it's an illegal encampment and must be removed. But they haven't done so. They haven't acted. They've turned to the government for their opinion on the matter. The government has delayed the decision for another 2.5 months. I mean, what is your take and what is your thoughts throughout this process in which it is clear in the Court of Justice, the High Court of Justice in Israel has made it clear that this is an illegal encampment? They have a solution for these people. They're actually saying, you know, well, you can move to this area closer to Yatta, even though we know you have houses there and we know that you're from there. What do you make of all this?
Okay, so that's what it is. It's total fraud, okay? What happened when they found evidence of those people living in the caves, okay? What were they? They were like seasonal shepherds.
Right.
And they would come from Yatta, a very hot day, and sleep over. That's all. They'd sleep over for a couple nights in the cool caves, which are super clean and nice and cool, and then they'd go back. So that's what they call habitation, and that doesn't qualify as habitation. Okay,
right.
That's not residency. So about 15 years ago, 10 years ago, maybe we saw a few of these squatters doing the same thing out here. Right, I see it right behind me, and in the last 5 or 6 years, more and more and more and more, and the EU has poured money into them and told them, stay put. You know you're at homes in Yatta. Stay put. Make yourself look like you live there. Now, you know, if you go all throughout Yehuda and Shomron, there's a lot of Arab building, a lot of Arab homes. But if you look, those homes and those buildings are empty. Because as soon as Arabs get money, they build. Very smart. They build.
Right.
And, here, they're not really buildings here. They're more like tents and rocks. There's nothing built. I think there might be one caravan, which they call a school, and I think the EU gave them that. It's an encampment, and there's a donkey there sometimes. During the winter, it's quiet. You know, they're not really living there. It's a show, and it's awful. And they're trying to cut us off and trying to make a big noise here.
Right. I mean,
they need to go. They need to go. And Yatta is no place where I would ever go. They have terrorists there. You know, that's where the Sirona killers came from, and I'm sure there are plenty more. And all throughout Har Chevron, you can see how little houses, little what do you call them, encampments. A house here or a pile of rocks that look like a cave, and they're doing the same thing.
Yeah, and the EU, I'm glad you brought that up, and we've talked about it before, but the EU has spent hundreds of millions of euro, literally, throughout Judea and Samaria, and E1 near Maale Adumim, and Har Chevron, and other areas. And the goal really is that one day, the thinking is as such, one day Israel and the PA, Palestinian Authority, will start negotiating. And then when they start putting lines on maps, they'll say, look, here is a village. So, of course, this is a part of a future Palestinian state. They are trying to seize land illegally, take it over, and then claim that they have ownership, claim they have historical ties. And, at Regavim, we have the maps the aerial photos to show that there was nobody there in 1999. There were no homes there. There was no village there. We have documents from the British Mandate never mentioning any type of Arab village called Susia. There is no historical tie. This is a ruse, but organizations, you know, you mentioned the European Union, but a lot of organizations, Jewish organizations, have fallen for this and are siding against democracy, against the rule of law, and are siding with those who are illegally squatting on land. I mean, it is mind-blowing to me.
Well, it's like Israel doesn't want to be hated. So they're listening to these opinions. And my opinion is, you know, get rid of them. They're not going to love you anymore if you let them stay. Do they love us? Does the world love us? No. They're not going to love us anymore if we give in and, you know, let these guys stay here. Get rid of them. Put them back where they belong, in their homes.
They have homes. They have homes in Yatta. It's documented.
And if they want other homes, that's very nice. Sorry. You know, you don't get everything you want. There's plenty of land here for everyone. Drive around. Plenty of space. It's ridiculous.
We will see what happens. We will see what happens with the situation. Again, I mean, we're supposed to hear on November 15th, the Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman, with the help of the Prime Minister, are supposed to come to some decision on this illegal encampment. But the world's eyes are on this little tiny town of, what is it, 200 families, you said, Jewish families, and this in the nearby encampment, to see if Israel will be strong and enforce the law. And that's what we're encouraging people to, you know, contact the defense minister and the prime minister and say, don't give in to the international pressure, as you said, because, you know, most, a lot of them are not our friends. We do have friends out there, certainly, pro-Israel people in the U.S. and in Canada and even in Europe and other places. But the world attention here is on Susia, and they're falsely claiming this is a humanitarian issue. But in reality, as you said, this is an ancient Jewish community reestablished after 1,500 years with a thriving and growing Jewish presence there nearby. And Natalie, keep on doing what you're doing. Keep on exposing those haters and keep on telling the truth about what Susia is. And keep on doing what you're doing, your holy work there with One Israel Fund, expanding and getting involved in these very important projects for the residents of Judea and Samaria. So I want to thank you so much. And if you can, give people your contact information if they want to learn more about the upcoming dinner, if they want to learn about you, if they want to learn more about the One Israel Fund. How can they reach you?
Okay, sure. I'll give you my email. Is that good?
Yeah, sure.
It's easy. It's natalie@oneisraelfund.org.
N-A-T-A-L-I-E, natalie@oneisraelfund.org. And, of course, you can get in touch with me. And I will be happy to put you in touch with Natalie. Natalie Slipinski, Director of Community Development, One Israel Fund. Thank you so much for your time today, and enjoy the beautiful views of the southern Hebron Hills down in Susia. And let's talk again soon.
Okay, Josh.
Thanks so much. And that's all the time we have for today, folks. This has been another edition of Israel Uncensored here on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. My name is Josh Haston. Get in touch with me during the week on Facebook, Josh Haston, H-A-S-T-E-N, Twitter, @JewOfZion, and keep sending those emails. I love the emails. I would love to read your emails on the air. Let me know what you think of the show. Love the show, hate the show. I am happy to hear all your opinions, your constructive criticisms, anything you have to say, josh@thelandofisrael.com. Thanks again to Binyamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire. For the 12th of September, 2016, I am signing out. Most importantly, between now and next Monday, everybody out there, be safe. Bye from Jerusalem. Founded in 1902, World Mizrahi is a global, Torah-driven, community-focused educational organization committed to Jewish identity and destiny. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement.
Have you ever planted a grapevine? What if the grapevine happened to be in the Land of Israel? Not only that, but if you were a Christian planting this grapevine in the mountains of Israel, you would be fulfilling prophecy that Isaiah and Jeremiah foretold more than 3,000 years ago. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to fulfill prophecy on the mountains of Israel by joining us this harvest. Go to Hayovel.com. That's Hayovel.com for more information. God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.